synapses.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so...
So, but cortisol is well known about for years and years. Like, they noticed, for example, that going back to looking at the studies of the Holocaust, the people that survived the Holocaust, that cortisol was much, much higher in third generation after the Holocaust, which is amazing. Even the grandchildren of people that were in the Holocaust, who had no contact with the Holocaust whatsoever, still had elevated cortisol levels. So cortisol is definitely a link with stress. So they focused in on that anyway, and they found that with men, what tends to happen is that the men get very upset. Their cortisol levels, if you like, are very high based on the level of hostility that's been expressed in the argument. So if the argument gets really bad and they're calling each other names and it's very hostile and lots of nasty things are said, then the cortisol goes way high in men and it tends to stay high for a period of time.
Okay, so you're not talking about the rights and wrongs of the actual debate. You're talking about the nature of the debate.
Exactly, that level of hostility, right? So it could be, it doesn't really matter what they're talking about, it's how angry and annoyed they're getting and how the nastiness of what they're saying to each other.
Right,
is,
okay.
So, interestingly though, that's not always true for women, because in this particular case, they were looking at pregnant women, and they found that what often happened was that in pregnant women, the cortisol levels actually went down after a very hostile interaction. And they've got various interpretations of this. And the researcher says that the theory is, anyway, that if the woman gets very anxious, if they feel that the guy isn't engaging, that he's not listening, ignoring a problem. So if even if there's a hostile interaction and they're shouting and roaring at each other, then the theory is that the woman then, at least she thinks to herself, well, at least we had an interaction there. At least we talked about it. So her level of stress, cortisol,
right. So, and that's the argument
down.
Is reassuring that there's at least some interaction.
Whoa.
Bloody hell.
That was stressful.
It certainly was. Something's hit the building here.
Yeah.
Are we being attacked?
I think
can't
we're okay.
Today, are we? All right.
We'll ignore the crane.
It's the first time that's happened. Right then. Where was I?
Yeah.
So they're happy with the interaction.
Yeah, they're happier with the interaction, whereas the man will stay very stressed for a much longer period of time because he's still fuming about the level of hostility. And then the whole interpretation of the thing is different as well, because a woman afterwards, they think that she would interpret a man not engaging as being a negative thing. That, you know, he's not bothering to make an investment into the relationship, so he's just disengaging. Whereas what the man might actually be doing is just saying, I'm so stressed, I'm very anxious, I just want this to stop, and he just withdraws.
Yeah.
So the whole interpretation of the argument can vary as well. But another thing then, if you go back to, some people are better at actually getting over the aftermath of the argument. Again, this is all to do with cortisol, measuring cortisol, various things have been done. But some people are the type that actually will just have the argument and then they'll manage to switch off and they'll gradually wind down. And then there's other people where they actually get stuck on a particular thing that's been said. They can't move on and, it goes around and around in their head and they stay very stressed. Now,
they don't build the bridge.
They don't build the bridge. Now, there's a study that says actually that this is linked to stuff that goes on very early in our lives. And going back actually to the University of Minnesota, and they're following people since the mid-70s on this particular thing, and they're watching them for other reasons. But anyway, they've looked at them over the years. They're now in their late 30s. They've looked at them at different stages of their life, and they looked at them when they were 20, and they looked at them more recently. And what they found was that some people are better at making this transition, if you like, from having an argument back to normality and forgetting about it than others that get stuck. So they thought, let's try and look into this. Let's try and look into the background of these people. And they asked the participants various things. They did some investigations of their lives, what the quality of the relationship, they call it, was like with their caregiver, i.e. their mother or their father, whoever was looking after them. And they found that there was a link between how well, basically, if you wanted to summarize it, how well you were looked after as a child, particularly between the ages of 12 to 18 months, how close the link was with your mother, say, typically,
gosh,
as the primary
really?
Caregiver.
That far, yeah.
Yeah. And that if you had a very, very stable, close relationship, they found in this study, University of Minnesota, that you had somebody that basically was able to regulate your negative emotions when you were getting very upset, particularly, it seems to be key, between the age of 1 and 1.5, then you learned how to better regulate your own emotions. And then you were the type of person, as an adult then, when measured much later, that you were able to then kind of calm down after an argument better than some other people. So that's kind of interesting because it goes so far back. But there's hope for people that, say, didn't have a particularly good childhood and maybe the relationship with the caregiver wasn't great. Then what they found was that actually if you're in a relationship where the other person is good at that, so if they had a secure childhood upbringing and a good relationship with their caregiver, they can actually compensate for the fact that you have a bit of a problem there, so that they can say, listen, we need to calm down here, we need to, they can bring them along, if you like. But I suppose the worst possible scenario would be if two people were from a background where it was insecure, because then there'd be nobody who would actually calm the situation down. So it's kind of interesting.
So can we learn from that and operate with that, or if you have cortisone, whatever it's called, injected into you by your brain, that you lose all logic, so you can't really say, there's this stuff coming into my brain and this is why I'm acting like this, I'll just counteract it.
I suppose the thing, the message might be that if you're the type of person that does ruminate and you get furious about an argument and you get stuck on something, that actually, you know, maybe you should listen to the other person that's trying to calm the situation down, and that's better in the long run. And it might have something, it might just be a chemical thing, but you're better to have a cooling off period there, perhaps, if you're that type of person.
Well, I can't imagine if something has been said and had been better left unsaid, you can't sort of bring it back, the genie is out and all that. You can't sort of say, well, actually, it was the cortisone levels that were...
Well, on that particular thing, like, it better left unsaid, you see, the woman wants everything said. You see, typically, the woman wants everything said and out there on the table. That seems to be what the studies are saying, whereas the guys don't, actually, and there's a very good reason why they don't, because the more hostile it gets, the more stress they get. So if things get really hot and heavy, the cortisol in the men is going through the roof, and they just might say, I want out of here, and disengage. So then again, then the woman interprets that as, well, they're not interested now, they've disengaged, whereas the guy is actually possibly very highly stressed, he's just trying to calm down, walk away.
Withdraw from a stressful situation.
Exactly.
Rather than withdraw from the argument.
That's right. There was something on divorce here as well I looked into. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, go on. Yes,
Okay. So, where is it now? So they, looking again onto divorce, and they found, again, they followed couples from 1986, a whole load of couples, actually, from 1986 up to 2002, and trying to figure out what are the factors that actually lead to divorce. And, of course, we all think that, you know, you hear about maybe a couple that was arguing on the day of their wedding or something, you think, oh, that's doomed to disaster, that's not going to last, you know? Well, in actual fact, the level of arguments that people were having in their first year of marriage didn't relate whatsoever to the level of divorce then, or the likelihood of them getting divorced at a later stage. And they found, for example, that 29% of women and 21% of the men in the first year of marriage said they had no fights whatsoever. There was absolutely no conflict. This is in the States. And of course, then 16 years later, almost 50% of them are divorced. So if you're having no arguments, it mightn't be a good thing either.
It's hard to
actually predict.
All right. Thanks very much indeed, Sean. Sean Duke is our science man. He's a science spinner. And it's SeanDuke.com.
Science spinning. Yeah,
right.
That's right.
And what do you write?